Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich with Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. Let's take a look at the docket. First, an Evelyn Boswell update. Second, the FBI is looking into Lori Vallis' third husband's death. Third, we're going to answer some viewers' questions regarding the Letitia Stauch hearing yesterday. Fourth, Harvey Weinstein is back in the hospital. And yes, a quick Christopher Watts update and our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. If you have not already done so, we would ask you to please subscribe. Hit that little bell if you'd like to receive notifications of when we put out new content. And as always, please leave us a comment below about what we discuss. First, an Evelyn Boswell update. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation has confirmed that the body that was found on the Megan Boswell's family house, the body in an outbuilding, was in fact that of Evelyn Boswell. The autopsy will remain sealed at this time, but obviously this was bad news. It's not surprising to anybody, but now it is actually official. And also, officially, no one has been charged with the death yet of Evelyn Boswell, but we will keep you posted. Next on the docket, the FBI is looking into the death of Lori Vallis' third husband, all right? We've talked about this. This lady has left a string of dead bodies wherever she seems to go. Now, she is given the presumption of innocence until and unless she is convicted or pleads guilty. So always remember that. Everyone is given the presumption of innocence, and no one believes in the presumption of innocence more than I do. Me, Scott Reich, as a criminal defense attorney for 25 years. But let's wait and see how things turn out. So according to the police in Phoenix, the Federal Bureau of Investigation has reached out to them in the course of their helping and assistance in Idaho that they wanted to look into the 2018 death of Joseph Ryan. Now, Joseph Ryan is the third husband of Lori Vallow. And Joseph Ryan is the father of Vallow's missing daughter, Tylee Ryan, who's 17. Now, Ryan reportedly passed away from an apparent heart attack in 2018. He was cremated upon his death, and so obviously we cannot exhume his body like they have done with Chad Daybell's wife to take a second look. But the FBI would like to take a look at the case as well and to see if there's any connection with Miss Vallow. Now, Charles Vallow, Lori Vallow's fourth husband and the father of her other missing child, Joshua, or J.J. Vallow, as he's known, was shot and killed by Lori Vallow's brother, Alex Cox, last July, back when the family lived in Arizona. Immediately after the shooting of her fourth husband by her brother, she withdrew her son from the Phoenix, Arizona school via phone and email on September 5. She claimed that she received a job promotion in California and said Charles Vallow died by suicide the previous month. And that's according to school officials in the Phoenix area. The school records were searched by the Chandler, Arizona Police Department via search warrant, and they stated in the search warrant, apparently, that they were investigating a conspiracy to commit first-degree murder on July 11th, the date that her husband was killed. It's alleged that the children, Tylee and JJ, disappeared in September. There's no apparent proof of Tylee's whereabouts since a family trip to Yellowstone National Park on September 8th, and no apparent proof of Joshua or JJ's location since September 24th. The FBI has asked people who were in the Yellowstone National Park area to look at any of their photographs and actually send them to the FBI so that they can see and look for any information or things of evidentiary value that may exist in those photographs and perhaps photos of the children. The one man in this world who may have dodged the biggest bullet in this particular case is Chad Daybell, Lori Vallis's fifth husband. Now, they married in Hawaii on November 5th and left town instead of helping in the investigation for the missing children. Now, Alex Cox, the brother of Lori Vallis, he died in December of unknown causes, according to the police. And that Daybell's wife, Tammy Daybell, died 2 weeks before his marriage to Lori Vallow. Her death initially wasn't considered to be suspicious, but investigators have recently exhumed her body in Fremont County, Idaho, to perform an autopsy on the remains. Alex Cox, Lori Vallis's brother, Alex Cox, was actually arrested in Texas in 2007 for tasing Joseph Ryan, deceased husband number three, and threatening to kill him after a custody exchange with Lori Vallis. Alex Cox ultimately pled guilty to aggravated assault in the second degree and served 3 months in jail for his guilty plea. The Lori Vallow case is by far one of the more bizarre cases that I have seen in a long time. You simply cannot make this stuff up. This woman is a black widow. Everyone around her seems to die mysteriously. And in this particular case, I think is going to be the big issue, is Chad Daybell marries her, Lori Vallows, 2 weeks after his wife passes away. I would love to see the information that links them to being romantically involved prior to Chad Daybell's wife's death. Certainly looks suspicious, and the abandonment charges in Idaho may soon be the least of Lori Vallis's concern. Next on the docket, a lot of questions were asked yesterday after the Letitia Stauch court appearance. One of the questions that seemed to come up a lot was, why is she in that particular colored jumpsuit? So for those who do not recall, Letitia Stauch was in a green colored jumpsuit. Oftentimes, you would see other inmates in El Paso County that have orange and white striped type of jail garb on. The color of the jail uniform has to do with the classification of their security risk. If they are in a high bond area, they will be in a particular colored uniform, so they don't get to just walk around the jail by mistakes, and it lets everybody know they're high risk. Most jails put people in either green or a red jumpsuit if they're personnel management issue, so to speak. And it depends. If they're more of just the general population or if they're in the misdemeanors, they get other various colors. The green would indicate to me that she is in a higher level of risk management, probably because of her conduct on her trip back to Colorado, where it is alleged in Wichita, they had to basically pull over because she had escaped from her handcuffs and assaulted the police officer, helping in the process of extraditing her back to Colorado. I have had cases, and you can go to most courts on any given day, and there's usually somebody there that is a high-risk management. They usually get escorted in with five or six deputies. They're standing by them. They're completely shackled every which way. I've had clients that have had stun belts on them. I've had clients that have had stun belts in trial, have the belt on them out of the view of the jury, but if they were to react or do something inappropriate, literally they would get stunned. There's lots of precautions that most people are not aware of when somebody is in custody and they are a management risk. 90% of the people will never be an issue. But as we saw yesterday, there was a gentleman in Kentucky who was our dumb criminal contestant of the day who got a little mouthy with the judge. I guarantee you, by the next court date, he will be a little more well-behaved, or the judge will probably remove him, and the sheriff takes the appropriate precautions in any way. So like I said, it could be more deputies, could be stun belts. If they tried to escape, we've had people that have tried to escape. Obviously, they show up in court where their ankles are shackled as well. They have a belt strapped to them along with a belly chain. They can get very creative to make sure that somebody appears in court, as they have a constitutional right to do, but to maintain the security. And normally, the judges are not going to get involved in those type of everyday security matters, other than to know and be aware of what the sheriff wants to do. The sheriffs will usually brief the judges if there is any type of concern. So, hope that answers that question. The other question was why is the affidavit for arrest warrant still sealed, but yet the witness list will be produced? It's strange. I agree. The affidavit should have been unsealed. The prosecution didn't object to it being unsealed. It should be unsealed. We should all be able to know. Like I said, I'm a big advocate of the fact that these court files are public information. They're public record. It used to be you could walk in and literally pick up any court file from the court clerk, check it out, copy it, do whatever you want with your copies, and move along. These days, it's getting more and more difficult. Everybody's concerned, oh, they claim it's a privacy issue. I personally think it's the court system just doesn't want to deal with it. They don't want everything to be accessible. Even now, you have to be able to have your ISIS account if you want to access another court file and pay for it. It's just become more and more cumbersome when it should become more and more easily available to all members of the public. It's a public record. These are public proceedings. So yes, it's frustrating, but the witness lists have to be turned over. It used to be the witness list was attached to the complaint and information, but under the rules that recently changed here in Colorado, they're separate and they are filed as a separate document. Not really sure why, other than for security reasons. The complaint information is provided to the defendant at the second advisement. And if you get a copy of the witness list, there's concerns that a defendant will reach out to the witnesses on the list and perhaps do something to intimidate or harass them in some way, which would be silly because that would just result in additional charges. But that's why they do it. Who knows? Why do they do it? Somewhere, someone along the line messed up and they made a new rule. That's just the way it is. Next, a Chris Watts update. And I know this case is gone, it's old, but just recently the court granted an order for restitution. Now, let's face it, Chris Watts is never going to pay restitution, but the district attorney has asked that the Crime Victim Compensation Fund be reimbursed for $41,807.98. Now, and there was also a supplemental motion for additional restitution in the amount of $4,593.60. These are funds that are paid out of the Victims Compensation Fund. It's there for victims who need therapy, if they need to travel for court appearances, some type of help to get resituated. Usually it's to help family travel back and forth for court, things of that nature. And that's paid out of the Victim Compensation Fund that is tacked on to every court cost in the state here of Colorado. When somebody either found guilty or pleads guilty, they have to pay into that fund. Like I said, Chris Watts will never repay that money, but if he does come into any money along the way, that money is part of the restitution that has to be repaid. Just thought we'd bring that up to date for you. Not anything particularly earth-shattering, but these are the facts, and that's the way we try to bring them to you. Another quick update as it relates to Harvey Weinstein. Obviously, he was sentenced, we talked about this yesterday, to 23 years in prison. Well, Harvey's had a bit of a tough go of it lately. He's had heart surgery, he's had back surgery, and now he has high blood pressure to the point where he has been transported from Rikers Island to Bellevue Hospital, whereupon he is receiving treatment. Now understand, Mr. Weinstein is not going to be receiving special care. He's not going to be saying, I have insurance, let me go to my own special suite and see the best doctors ever. Oh no, he is now a prisoner in the New York Department of Corrections, and he will be receiving the same medical care as anybody else. He will also be shackled to his bed, and he will also have a deputy nearby in the medical ward of the hospital. Once he's done, he will be returned back to the infirmary at the prison, but it's not like he's going to go home. It's not like he gets some sort of furlough to go home. He is going to be in prison, okay? Only case I've ever seen where they've let somebody go was I had a client who had to have literally open heart surgery. It was super expensive. The surgery was expensive. The aftercare, the medications were more expensive. And in that particular situation, there was a kind of an emergency extreme situation for parole. Why? Because the Department of Corrections didn't want to pay for it. They're not going to have to worry about that with old Mr. Harvey Weinstein. He's not in that bad a shape, even if he is. I mean, let's face it, it's not going to look good. The longest kind of average for people to survive in prison is about 72 years of age. You just don't get the medical treatment that most people need or desire in there because, let's face it, they are rationing all that because there's limited resources and they have to spread it around throughout the year. So he's not going to be getting the best medical care at all. Now, finally, today on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, we've talked about a lot of dumb criminals who have done some really dumb things, but a gentleman by the name of Savraz Shakur may have catapulted himself to the top of the dumb criminal contestants of the day. What did Mr. Shakur do? Well, as you all know, there may be a shortage of toilet paper running around the United States for things that we're not going to talk about here today on our channel. Mr. Shakur was out walking around in his neighborhood, happened to notice that his neighbor had some toilet paper in the car. The car was unlocked. Mr. Shakur took the toilet paper. Now, why does Mr. Shakur become a dumb criminal just for breaking into people's cars? Well, he's dumb because there was a six-pack of Smart and Simple toilet paper. This is probably the cheapest toilet paper in the history of toilet paper. This is not Double Ply. This is not Charmin. This is cheap, cheap stuff, right? Well, there's a six-pack in the truck. Mr. Shakur only takes one. Guess what the value of that one roll of toilet paper was? That's right, $1. Well, guess what? Even though he took that $1 roll of toilet paper, he is now charged with felony burglary of that vehicle because he entered the vehicle with the intent to commit a crime therein, even if it was only $1. $1 felony. Mr. Shakur, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And like I said, you may have catapulted yourself to the running for the dumb criminal contestant of the year. Mr. Shakur, keep up the good work. That's all we have on Crime Talk. Thanks for taking the time to go through the docket with me. Have a wonderful day.